Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your doorway, so get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors online. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
I didn't know Jerry Levine could sing. Carrie Toon, you harmonize. You probably used to sing in the church choir, I bet.
I used to be in a high school band, rock and roll band.
Oh, no kidding. Hey, it's nice to have you folks with us here tonight on Maine Outdoors. And you know, and I've told you week after week, this is Maine's longest running outdoor talk radio program, and we're sincere about that. We've been around for 100 years, right, Jim?
That's right. Narrow but long.
Yeah, and we're both great grandfathers, right?
Narrow, I like
we
that.
We are.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Okay, we're so pleased that you could be with us, and this is a talk show tonight. We have a fabulous guest lined up. Introduce him in just a moment. First, the crew who make this show possible every week. The engineer, the man behind the gauges there in Studio B, my friend from Orrington, Mr. Jim Layton. Take a bow, James.
Well, good evening, folks. Going to be a great show tonight, and what a wonderful host and guest we have.
You bet. You're talking about me or him?
Well, I'm talking about both of you, Alice, and my two cohorts here.
Yeah, your cohorts are the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream, Norman Plord. What's your middle initial?
G.
Norman G. Plord.
For goodness.
Yeah, you bet.
Or golly.
Oh, gracious.
Greatness.
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 And are you still the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream?
Haven't been there yet, so this summer. So
been a while, yeah. And with him to his right is the Kenny Rogers lookalike, the Raspberry Baron of Orrington, Mr. Scott Bates. Take a bow, Scotty.
Yes, good evening, Paul, and good evening, everybody out there. And if we sound a little muffled, we got some delicious chocolate chip cookies in there. We're all eating them.
Yeah, aren't they good? Yeah.
Thank you to somebody. I think it's
yeah,
Alice.
Cooked by, I didn't introduce Alice. Alice, okay. Bob's wife Alice is also with us tonight, and beside Alice is my great-grandson, Davin Reynolds, who's going to be the numbers. What's the number if somebody wants to call a show tonight, Davin?
1-800-966-1039.
You bet. Now, what if, do they have to dial a whole number?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And my co-host, who is a master Maine guide, he's Mr. Salvalinas Fontalanos himself. We get my got a piece of chocolate chip cut there. Yeah. Mr. Robert F. Lehman, take a bow.
I appreciate it, sir. We also have Precious with us tonight, right over there in Alice's lap.
That's what we do. The whole family is here.
Everybody, what a crew we got tonight. The whole family.
Hey, I love that woolly booger hat. That woolly bugger. Boy,
you can buy one for $10.
You can buy one for $7 if you if I'm feeling gracious.
All right.
Wow. Okay. I like that.
Our guest tonight is a gentleman who's been with us numerous times on the show, and he always full of information, and we're really happy to have him back again. He's down from Orrinville. He's just fresh out of the working on the garden. Like to welcome Maine's former IF&W deer biologist, who is now Sam's wildlife biologist, Jerry Levine.
Good evening, folks, and I hope it'll be a great show.
It will. I know it always is when Jerry's here. And if you have questions for Jerry, again, the telephone number, if you want to dial it, is
1-800-966-1039.
Okay, Outdoor Digest time, and this is brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. And again, as I reminded you last week, if you're looking for some part-time work and you have any experience or skills in advertising sales, we're looking for some part-time advertising salespeople, and you can contact my partner, Vic Morin, at 732-4880 during the week and talk to Vic about some job possibilities there.
What was that number again?
That's 732-4880.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You looking for work?
You never can tell.
Oh, okay.
I got a new car I got to pay for.
You got to pay for that, yeah. Any deer permits, just a reminder again, the department is now accepting applications for doe permits, and you can apply this year online only by going to the IF&W website, and you have until August 15th to make your application. Let's see. I was up in Milo yesterday, invited up there to display some of my watercolor art.
Really?
They have an art show up there.
No kidding, Paul. That's great.
Yeah, we had a great time. And I was so impressed with some of the great new attractions they have in the town of Milo. You won't believe they have a museum up there that's it's really, you know, up to standard. It's just unbelievable. And they also have a new welcome center there, all kinds of artifacts, geology, some wonderful wildlife paintings, and a complete section there on the history of Milo Brownville.
Wow.
So if you're into that sort of thing, I would suggest you get a trip up there sometime this summer. You'll enjoy it. I think it's time now, isn't it, for Bob's favorite music?
It is.
Now let's let Jerry do it.
I'm the big boss Bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Good Jerry.
Yeah. Oh. That's the first time in the history of the show we've ever asked the guest to do the yeah. Jerry, that was outstanding.
Excellent.
Right. Outstanding.
Right on cue, too.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Bob, what's up in the fishing world?
Well, you know, I got an interesting little tidbit here for you tonight, Paul.
Okay.
You remember last week I talked about people catching all these stripers all over the place? A very terrific run this year they've had in the main rivers, and a lot of people are taking advantage of that. And I told him that maybe that one of the better flies I used to catch stripers on a few years ago was a fly I called the striper fly, and it had a marabou, black marabou wing and an orange body.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had, holding in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers, mm-hmm. a letter that I got this week,
mm-hmm.
and he sent me a fly.
Oh, look at that. That's
and look
beautiful.
At that. And that is
Hold
a
that up closer
the letter was
to the
from...
Mic.
Hold it closer to the mic.
Yes.
You folks at home see that. This is beautiful.
There you go.
It's a deep orange, kind of a pumpkin orange with a little red tail on it and a couple of black feathers. That's nice.
That's hackles.
Hackles. Well, hackles. I mean, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. Hackles. Yeah, hackles. Excuse
yeah.
me.
Well, the one I advertised was marabou, black marabou.
So who
sent
that?
This along. Okay, fellow by the name of Ken Thomas.
Don't read the whole letter, though.
No, no.
Have time for that.
No,
okay.
No. It's very short anyway, but I mean, he sent that along because it brought back old memories for him.
Yeah.
He was listening to the show, Regular Man.
Okay.
And he used to tie this fly right here that we're showing tonight that he sent along. And that fly is called, believe it or not, Sucker Bait. That's a sucker bait fly, and it's in my book, Trolling Flies for Trout and Salmon.
Yeah.
You know the book, Paul.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what exactly the page it's on, but this fellow, apparently years ago, came into my shop many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
And showed me this fly, and it ended up in my book, and I haven't really seen one until this week.
Oh, that's great!
And apparently, this is the fellow who tied it originally.
All right,
because he said it. He said you wouldn't believe how it catches stripers.
What's his name again?
Ken Thomas.
Where's he from?
From Calais, Maine.
All right.
So he was quite a really nice letter, and
right.
I thank him so much.
And
if he is the fellow who came into that shop originally, let us know. We'd like to hear from that.
All
and
right.
Another little point I'd like to make is last week I mentioned the Mansfield fly. Well, my son says, well, you were wrong, Dad. It's Maxfield. And I said, no, it's Mansfield. And he said, no, it's Maxfield. So we got the book out, and it's guess who's right?
Bobby Jr.
No, actually not.
Oh, the old man was right.
Right.
Oh, no.
The old man.
All right.
It's
All
an
right.
orange bucktail wing.
And it's called the Maxfield.
And a yellow, a white bucktail underneath.
All right.
And it's called a Maxwell. And it's a very good fly for trout, really is.
All right.
And then in the book, in the Trolling Flies book, it's tied with hackles.
All right.
Orange and white.
Okay. Well, we'll go, get on the river and give that a shot.
Well, it certainly would.
Okay.
I bet it would work real well.
Okay. That's it, right?
That's it.
Thank you. Good job. Real quick, the VZ Salmon Club is sponsoring a fish fry, and that's taking place Saturday. That would be this Saturday, July 28th, 12 noon to 4. Fish, salad, homemade potato fries, hot dogs, chips, sodas, bottled water, silent auction, and a beautiful view of the Penobscot River, and free giveaways. That's at on the Old County Road there in Vesey this weekend, July 28th. And I tried to get a hold of Bob Winginick to give him a chance to plug this little thing a little bit, but I couldn't reach him. So don't forget that. The Vesey Salmon Club has been resurrected, and they're back in the business of having a good time, and they invite you to join them this Saturday for the big fish fry. And that wraps up Outdoor Digest.
It does. One, yes,
sure.
Go ahead.
Go.
One little thing We should mention that they can hear us in Augusta on 101.3, 103.9 in Bangor, and something new to me, 95.1 in Rockland.
They've added another station.
From 14. Wow. Well, I don't know if 1450 AM is still on or not. Probably is.
So that's a new FM station.
Yeah, 95.1 Rockland.
Well, I'll be darned. Okay, wow. Great. All right, so we're just reaching out. That's good.
And what time was that VZ Salmon Club?
That's noon to 4.
Noon to 4.
Noon to 4, yep.
Evening, it's in the afternoon.
Nice fish fry up there. That'll be good. We're going to ask Jerry Levine, our guest, to read the outdoor trivia question. And, you know, every month, once a month, we give away a subscription to the journal. But because I'm going to be away the first week in August, I'm going to take a liberty here since it's my paper. And I'm going to give away the August subscription today.
Ooh.
So if you know the answer to Jerry's question, you'll win a year subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal.
Should I read it or sing it?
You can sing it or read it, whatever. But try to give it a little. I like a little
operatic. I'll back you up, Jerry.
Like
I'll back you up.
If you can sing it like Andre Bocelli, then we'll appreciate it.
Let me get my banjo.
You don't know who Andre Bocelli is?
Okay, here's the question. Name at least two migratory game birds that you can legally hunt without a migratory waterfowl stamp.
And the number to call is
1-800-966-1039.
And we'll be right back. Okay, our studio guest Jerry Levine wants you to tell him what type of game birds you can hunt without using a migratory waterfowl stamp. Steve, you're on Maine Outdoors with our guest Jerry Levine.
Hi, good evening, folks. My name's Steve. I'm from Conkin Township. That'd be snipe and woodcock.
Oh, you got it right away.
Yeah, I've been hunting a long time.
All right. Do you know what anything...
We have debated this back in New Hampshire since 76.
Wow.
All right. Congratulations, Steve. You have won the subscription to the journal.
If you could add that on to the tail end of my subscription, which just renewed it.
Oh, golly. You already have a subscription?
You're a biologist.
You already have a subscription?
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
I just sent it in to OSP the other day.
I just lost another $30. Dag nabbit.
Added on to the tail end of mine. I appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, we'll do that for you. I'm feeling generous tonight. If you'll stay on the line, Steve, one of our guys here, one of the engineers, will get your address, and I'll make sure you get extended, okay?
I think he had a question for you.
Can I ask the biologist a question?
Sure, go ahead. Shoot.
Hi, Mr. Levine.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Steve. I'm over here in Conkin Township. I have put near 400 acres. It's wooded. Why can't I hunt it without a license?
Without any license?
The wider deer permit on my own land. Or a deer license. I mean, I don't raise broccoli. I raise trees. I'm kind of farming them. It'd be nice if the state could throw us landowners a ball. Be great towards
our
landowner relations.
No question it would be. Unfortunately, a whole lot of these ideas that also sound good would end up eating up most of the available any deer permits that occur in one zone or another each year. And
well, I get permits over here anyway, whether it's landowner or. Hunting license to hunt on our own land.
So, your caller, you're breaking up a little bit, but so you're.
I'm in Conkin Township in the mountains, and the fog is about 40 feet off the ground.
You're looking to hunt without a big game license? Is that what you're saying?
Correct, on our own property only.
Oh. No, you can't do that in Maine. No, you got to have a.
I know, but why don't we? I got to pay $2,200 a year in taxes for 400 acres in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And expect to let everybody else on here, but it'd be nice if us landowners could get something for free.
Well, you already do have a head start on the doe permit program if you're a landowner, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, if people are growing broccoli or Christmas trees or whatever you guys consider farming, I grow paper so people can, I'm going to say, blow their nose.
Steve, the department has been licensing hunters since 1919, and in my 30 years of working, I have not seen a proposal where they would give out the ability to hunt on your own land without a license for any game.
Well, what about in game laws? They say if you have more than 25 continuous acreage and it's farmland, that you're, if you're a member of the household, you can hunt there. How does that work?
You still have to have a big game license. So.
Yeah, you still need to be licensed.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Because the way the book writes, it sounds that you can hunt on your own land if you're growing vegetables, but not really.
You still have to have a license, yeah.
All right, well, I don't mean to take up all your own time. Well, you thank you, and bring back the spring bear hunting.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think it's about time, especially with the problem I have with bears.
We might have a few more moose, seeing that the bears eat my calves over here. We might have a few more deer, since the bears eat my...
Yeah.
Over here.
Amen to that, brother. I think the spring bear hunt's the way to go. I couldn't agree better. Right. Agree more, yeah.
Keep up the great show, and thanks for listening, guys.
Okay, appreciate Steve. Take care. Thank you.
Yeah, hang on.
All right, stay on the line. Yep. Okay, let's get down to business here. Again, if you joined us later, our guest is Jerry Levine. Jerry was a deer biologist for the Fish and Wildlife Department for 30 years, and now he's Sam's wildlife biologist and consultant. And Jerry also has a chief operating officer of a great little business called Dunlater Farm Smokehouse. And I know from personal experience that Jerry knows his business. He cooks up some great stuff there, and we'll get a chance to let him talk about that later in the show. Right now, we want to start out talking a little bit about a topic that we touched upon a few weeks ago when we interviewed Nathan Bieber, who's the new deer biologist who replaced Jerry. And we talked a little bit about the feeding program and the ramifications for that with respect to the deer population and so on and so forth. Jerry, what's Sam's position on feeding deer?
Within Sam, our policy is that feeding deer is fine. It can be helpful, but you really have to pay attention to the details and do it right. Otherwise, you can create harm. And that's really the department's position as well. Although they discourage feeding, they really are all about ensuring that the deer are fed, are kept healthy and safe, and that in that way we don't disagree. But one of the things Nate said when he was on that I took exception to. He mentioned that as an alternative to feeding deer, you can go out and in your woodlot and cut cedar trees for them. Now, there's no question that northern white cedar is absolute number one winter food for deer. And deer thrive on it, and they relish it, and they get it wherever they can. But that cedar tree is far more valuable to remain alive in your woodlot than to cut it. If you cut that tree, you'll get maybe 20, 25 pounds of food for the deer. But that tree can live for 200 years. And every winter, it drops a few of its leaves, and the deer just vacuum them up. And it's more valuable to keep it as a live tree because about half of the deer's winter feed are what is called litter fall, leaves that fall out of the canopy in these deer yards that the deer clean up day after day after day. About half their winter diet comes from above. So I wanted to reinforce that cutting cedar trees is not an alternative, a viable alternative to feeding deer.
One of the points that Nathan made, I'm sure you'd agree with, is that once you commit to a deer feeding program, it can be very costly, right?
Oh, absolutely. The number of deer that start coming to your feeding site can increase dramatically. You might start out with a couple deer, but they gossip to each other all the time. And when they figure out new food sources, you'll see that there are 2 or 4 or 8 or 10 or 12 deer before you know it. And and when I was still working for the department, we dealt with this issue because it was. Winter feeding was increasing in popularity, and in some places deer had been fed literally for decades. And we'd noted that wherever deer congregate for a long time in the winter like that, they don't just eat the food you give them. They eat all the shrubbery, they eat all the browse, they eat all the brush in the vicinity. Look at it this way. They'll spend a half hour twice a day filling up on your grain, and then they've got 23 hours to get in trouble. by feeding on other things. And because they're on a good diet of, say, grain, they can eat other foods that are that normally they would pass up. And so your spruces may end up looking misshapen, or your apple trees would be severely hammered. So there is a downside to feeding. And I would caution that you feed the right types and the right amount of food. A grain supplement, you could use corn, but it's better to use a formula that's fitted for deer or cattle that has a complete balance of energy and protein. About 2 to 3 pounds a day is what's required to maintain deer. And if you don't feed that amount, then you risk having malnourished deer that may get bottled up, and you might find some starvation losses in a place where you want to help them through the winter.
So in your handout here, it says the average takes six deer will eat about 125 pounds per week, and that's 1,800 pounds a year. What does that translate to in terms of cost? I have no idea what grain is, or what's a rough ballpark figure?
A 50-pound bag of grain is going to run you about $10 to $14.
Okay, so it's could be $100 a week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
There was a fellow I knew in a research yard I was studying in Bower Bank. He was feeding at least 200 deer for several years.
Oh, boy.
In a deer yard on the North Shore of Sebec Lake in Bower Bank. And he was spending thousands of dollars buying a couple of ton of feed a week and taking care of those deer. His wife was never more happy when he quit feeding than that was.
Yeah. All right. You stay with us. We'll be back with more with our guest, Jerry Levine, right after these messages. Okay, for those of you who may not be aware of it, SAM is an acronym for the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, and Jerry Levine, our guest tonight, is a wildlife biologist consultant for the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. And we've been talking white-tailed deer. We talked a little bit about the feeding program, and I think, Jerry, you wanted to kind of wrap this up a little bit, right?
Sure. About 6 or 7 years ago, SAM put together a one-page flyer that anyone who feeds deer would benefit from reading. It gives the guidelines on if you're going to be feeding, here's how you do it right. That's available at the Sportsman's Alliance office at
623-4589. Oh, okay. Well, the number I have here is 622-5503, that's not the right number.
Yeah, that's an old one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. What's the number again?
623-4589. And just either email on the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine website or contact Becky. We also publish in the SAM News, which goes out to all of our members. We have 10,000 members. We publish those guidelines every November and December at the start of feeding season. So it's pretty important to get the word out on doing it properly.
Okay. Jerry, when you were saying cattle grain, we used to feed like Core 16. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Is that the kind of?
Yep, that would work just fine.
Okay, because Blue Seal would carry that.
Yep, and even down to 12% protein. Uh-huh. Deer do need a protein source for the winter. They need a lot of calories to stay warm and to move about, but they also need protein. And anything 12% or a little higher is just fine for them.
One of the things that I've wondered about, and I've talked to various folks at IF&W about this, I just wonder, with all of the huge increase in deer wintering feeding, I wonder what an impact that might have on the habits of the deer with regard to their conventional wintering areas, you know, like the yards and so forth. Ryan Robichaud, who is the, I think he's the wildlife director, right, at IF&W?
Yeah.
He made the comment in an interview I did with him. He said this is the new normal, and he believes that these winter feeding programs will actually change the deer wintering habits of many deer. What's your view on that?
Oh, there are a lot of examples where large feeding areas start up, and it starts attracting deer, and the deer will change their winter migration patterns and essentially abandon some of the wintering habitat they formerly occupied and travel several miles to live in and amongst these feeding areas. Brownville is famous for that. Brownville and Brownville Junction, there's been a lot of feeding, and a lot of the deer yards that were up on the upper reaches of the Pleasant River are no longer used right now because all the deer are in town. The same thing occurred in the Rockwood area, and also in the Jackman area, and the longest term one over in Wilson's Mills, right on the New Hampshire border. They've been feeding deer since the 1950s, and the deer have moved completely away from their natural wintering habitat, and they stay in amongst the town.
Wouldn't they be more susceptible to coyote predation?
Well, that is a possibility because the deer now are concentrated in a much smaller area than in a natural winter yard.
Sure.
And there is a possibility that coyotes could get in there and raise heck with them. I recommend that if you're going to feed deer, you might also want to be vigilant about coyote predation and take some active steps to reduce coyotes if they occur in that area as well.
So these deer apparently communicate with each other. Two or three deer find out they can get free food at back of Joe's house, and the rest of them soon learn that, and they actually leave the deer yards.
It's like bees
to go spend the winter in Joe's backyard.
And
right?
over time, this transition takes place. Now Ryan also mentioned that deer are getting closer to towns and villages because of predation or pressure from coyotes. There is an element of truth to that, but it has been seen in places like Minnesota with wolves that deer thrive best near villages and towns where wolves are reluctant to get in amongst the houses.
So they probably figure that out. The deer probably figure out, I'm safer in Joe's backyard than I am.
But it may be a little trickier than that. It may be that the deer around the villages have a higher survival rate, and it's not that they've moved in because of coyotes. It's just that they have a higher survival rate because coyotes are not as high preying on as many deer around the towns as they do in the deep woods.
Okay. One of the things, if you're going to write about deer in Maine, you got to write about deer wintering areas, and I've done this for numbers of years. And we had Nathan on the other day, and I asked the question about deer yards, and it seemed like he was either reluctant to answer it or really didn't have a handle on it to this point. And the feeling I've been getting from the department over the last few years is when I pursue this as a reporter, Jerry, it seems to be kind of an elusive thing that it's complicated, that they don't really have a handle on the inventory. And I remember back when you were the biologist there, it seemed like you had a pretty good sense of what the goal was as far as deer wintering areas. What am I missing here? Is the fact that we have so much deer wintering feeding, is that taking away the old concern about deer yards? What's happening? Something's happening.
No, and if you refer to the new management plan that the department has put together, there's still a focus on increasing the acreage and the quality of wintering habitat. But they're not setting the specific goals that we had been under in 1985 to 2015 before this new plan was set in place. Now, to Nate's credit, we will have to say that he's only been on less than a year. And so becoming familiar with all the data and all the of what's available inside the department, he may not be up to speed yet. I think it would be extremely comical if we went back and showed some of my appearances on the Bud Levitt show in the early 1980s. I mean, it would be a hoot to see that compared to after gaining 30 years of experience, an asset or a person gaining knowledge and experience can bring forward with department information.
I can tell you think I'm being too hard on Nathan.
Yeah. One of the things, though, that Nate said, a caller, I think it was Willie, called in and asked if there was a historic record of the deer yards, and Nate was a little fuzzy on that.
Yeah,
there is a record. The biologists that were first hired by the department, straight out of World War II, in the 1950s and early 60s, one of their first assignments was to do an inventory of all the wintering habitat, primarily in the northern half, but also in the southern half of Maine. And in those early 50s, there was a lot of spruce fir forest, there was a lot of winter cover, and a lot of deer. We had deer in northern Maine that were almost as abundant as they are in central Maine today. And there was a wintering habitat base to support them. There were over 1,200 deer yards, major deer yards, in the northern half of the state. And those deer yards were mapped on topographic maps. And today, the department's in the process of digitizing those and putting them on a computer overlay. So that is going on. And that was about 15% of the landscape was occupied by deer in the winter. Beginning in the late 60s and through the 70s and 80s, when the combination of spruce budworm and the logging that chased the budworm epidemic took place in northern Maine, we certainly lost the type of cover that provides wintering habitat for deer. We lost a lot of it. And now, as that forest is now 30 years growing back, we're gaining back some of that spruce fir type of winter habitat that's going to grow into a type of forest that can shelter deer again.
One of the concerns that you mentioned, Willie, we'll take a call here in just a minute. One of the points that Willie made, I think, was a reasonable one. You know Willie, he spends a lot of time in the woods.
Oh, I know Willie.
And basically what he was saying, Jerry, to Nathan was, you know, you're letting these loggers cut the hell out of these deer yards.
Yeah.
And I think he knows whereof he speaks.
Yes, let's
you don't reject that, right?
No, let's take that call and then get into the management of deer yards, because that's an important point.
All right, let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Sam's wildlife biologist, Jerry Levine. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Very interesting show. I've been pushing for years to get the deer back out into the woods where they're supposed to be. The word wildlife, they are wild animals. Feeding should be illegal. Coyotes should not be killed until they will push the deer out into the woods again. And we also need cedar trees replanted, because that's really what they love to lay under. Hundreds of years ago, they had beautiful cedar groves everywhere. And that also puts a check on the bugs. Deer lie on the cedar to keep the bugs off them, and moose too, but there are none less. The woodsmen have taken them all. And like you say, we've got to watch what they cut, and they've got to leave some stuff alone. So thank you. This is very important.
All right. Appreciate the call. Jerry, react to that?
It's difficult to put it in such simplistic terms as that. Deer will use a lot of other habitats just than cedar forests and that type of thing, and it's extremely difficult to move deer or coyotes anywhere. They're going to go where they want to go, and you know, that's going to determine it, not what we want or what we assign to for habitat for an animal.
Okay. Do we have another caller standing by, Norm? Okay. We're going to take a quick break so Bob Lehman can help the company make a buck here with our radio program. Bob, you want to tell the folks about General Appliance?
We certainly will here. General Appliance in Brewer is one of our longest sponsors, I think.
Yes,
we've
they
had
are.
For what?
They are
close
indeed.
To 20 years now?
Yes, yes, sir.
And one of our first. And they're still with us and hang with us. And I've talked to Elkin over there many times. And he said, that's the only sponsor that I have and the only sponsor I need.
You
that's
bet.
General Appliance in Brewer. Now, that's quite a statement, isn't it? Huh?
Now, why should I want to go into Al's store?
Well, you can pick up gas appliances. They specialize in gas refrigerators, gas freezers, and top-of-the-line compost toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
And one thing about compost toilets is there's no running water required, no plumbing, no septic, no leach field, no environment issues.
And you don't have to use any of that lime when you go out there.
No. And advanced technology. How can you go wrong with a compost toilet?
Okay. And he stands behind and services everything
he sells. Absolutely. And they also have regular electric appliances as well.
And I know his phone number. It's 989-3714 if you want to call out.
You sure now?
I'm positive.
What was that number again?
989-3714.
Yeah. And if you need parts for your gas appliances
appliances,
and they do repair work as well. Okay. Give him a call. He's the man to ask for.
All right. Great folks to do business with.
They certainly
General Appliance in Brewer.
Yes, they are. Okay. And they're easy to find, and they sell our books over there.
Yes, sir, they do. And if somebody wants to call in and ask Mr. Levine a question, Davin, what number do they dial?
1-800-966-1039.
You're really getting relaxed as a broadcaster. The way you're laid back there, it's just as cool as you can be. I think you've got a bright future in broadcasting. Okay, Jerry, we're talking about deer yards. You want to follow up on that question? I guess what I want to try to get across here without being too critical of everybody, I have to be honest on this show. I'm an old guy. It doesn't matter, right? If I get fired, I get fired. But, you know, I pursue this thing because I'm an avid deer hunter. And I worry about the state of the deer in Maine almost as much as you do, probably. And I just don't seem to be able to nail anybody down, to be honest about it. To be brutally frank, I can't nail anybody down on this deer yard issue. I don't know what the truth is.
But is that the only issue you can't nail them down with?
No,
let's face it. This is civil service. It's state government.
Yeah, okay.
And the number one priority is to keep your head down, don't make waves.
Yeah.
All right? Maybe. So prying controversial information out of them is pretty difficult.
So it is controversial, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And here's part of the controversy. Willie mentioned that we're cutting all the deer yards. The department let the deer yards get all cut.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of logging taking place. But one thing I disagree with Willie on is that in spruce fir deer yards, you have to manage them with timber harvesting or they're going to fall down on their own from old age.
Okay.
Balsam fir only lives about 70 years, and it's good for deer by about age 35, but three decades later, that balsam fir is decrepit, old, kind of like us, bad knees, bad limbs, bad everything.
Yeah.
And eventually the tree dies, the forest dies, and it falls down and it doesn't create cover anymore. The goal of deer yard management with the state and with industrial timberland owners is to try to keep, let's say you've got 1,000 acres of wintering habitat, try to keep about a third of it in young cuts that are producing the next forest. Try to keep about a third of it in young forest that's pole stage and growing toward what's good deer yard, and then having about a third of it that provides adequate shelter for deer. And it's extremely difficult to do, and it's extremely expensive for a private timberland owner to do. They'd rather cut the whole 1,000 acres at once, and they'll find one excuse or another to do that. The purpose of the department's cooperative agreements is to try to slow down that rate of cutting and to try to optimize where and how it takes place to benefit deer. And that's part of that's one department focus is the cooperative agreements with landowners. Another one is the Land Use Regulation Commission, where we have zoned about 200,000 acres of deer wintering habitat. And by regulation, anytime a timberland owner wants to make a cut in there, the department biologists make the decision on when, how, and how much is cut.
Does that zoning still exist?
That still exists.
Okay.
And that's for about 200,000 acres of habitat. Another 400,000 acres is cooperative agreements. The third focus is, because this stuff's so expensive to do, you got to maintain roads, you got to do small cuts, you got to go in frequently, like once every 5 or 10 years and take just a small amount. That's expensive. So what timberland owners have said and what Sam and the department fully endorse is, why not have the people of Maine, through our Department of Conservation, manage wintering habitat? So through the Land for Maine's Future program, with bond money, we are actively looking to purchase wintering habitat that'll be managed by the state of Maine.
Is that happening now?
That is happening. That is happening now. It's slowed down a little bit under Governor LePage's reluctance to open bonds, but
there is an ongoing program.
Yes, and it was Sam that in the last 5 or 6 years, it was Sam that got that legislation through that prioritizes purchase of deer wintering habitat, just for improving management of that type of forest.
Okay. Do you think that you'll ever see the day when a guy like maybe somebody like maybe not me but some other outdoor writer says to somebody down there at Fish and Wildlife, can you give me a map so I can look at where all these major wintering areas are located so I could actually see them and put it in front of me and do it? Do you think that day will ever come? Does that ever happen? No,
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't? Oh, so you never were there? You never had a map?
We had all the topo maps in the regional offices, they do exist. And the other thing I'd like to point out is the thousands and thousands, 1.25 or so million acres of deer yard in northern Maine. That's still good wintering ground, but it's not in the right vegetative stage to protect deer. What I'm trying to say is forest soils that support the growth of spruce and fir and hemlock and cedar are still going to be forest soils that support those things 30 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now. It's the type of ground that grows deer yard cover. It's just a matter of how do we manage that forest from now on into the future so that it comes back in the condition that deer can use.
Okay.
So we haven't lost all this forever. It's in transition. It's growing.
Okay.
And the idea is once it comes back to a stage, then we should start managing it properly again.
Do you think the deer yard issue is one of the major factors we've had a precipitous decline in Northwoods deer, or do you think it's the weather?
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, and we don't have a lot of time left, but I wrote an article under Sam that kind of explores this, and what it's called is, do deer really die of winter severity? And it was only partially tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Deer die during severe winters, but they die of starvation and they die of predation and a few other causes.
Right.
And if you've got habitat that deer can get around in the wintertime because the snow is less deep, they're going to be better off than in poorer habitat with deep snow. If you've got a habitat that has no coyotes, then there are going to be fewer deer that die during the winter, regardless of the severity of winter. If you've got deer that come into the winter that are fat and well-prepped, they can take at least 12 weeks of hard going. I have a saying, it takes 12 weeks to starve a healthy doe in the wintertime, but it only takes 12 hours for the right conditions for intense predation to develop from a snowstorm, from a glare ice, and that type of thing. And so you really have to manage three factors. You can't do anything about the severity of the winter, but you can mitigate its problems by having a predator control program that keeps predator densities low in the deer yards and having a management program on the forest that keeps it in optimal condition. And number three, make sure that deer are healthy going into the fall and not too abundant to gain fat. If you've got those three factors, you've got the best chance of long-term survival.
So it ain't simple, is it?
Well, it's
complex.
It's not all that complex. It's not rocket science.
No.
But you have to pay attention to the major factors.
Yeah.
Just using the umbrella statement of winter severity is a cop out. It hides the fact that you need a predator control program, and the fact that you need to regulate deer so they stay healthy, and also you have to manage the forest.
Yeah, Maine has always had severe winters.
That's exactly the point.
Yeah, we've got 2 minutes. I want to give you a chance to mention your business up there in Orrinville. Your smokehouse does some great work. I've eaten some of the great food you've prepared up there. Tell the folks about your business.
Okay. when we've moved in to the farm we're at, I learned how to cure and smoke ham and bacon. We produce our own food, our own meats. We sell turkeys at Thanksgiving and that type of thing. And in doing so, I've learned, I've accumulated a lot of knowledge on how to cure meats and how to make cold cuts and that type of thing. When I got done with the department, I redeveloped my part of my property into a commercial smokehouse. And the business model is simple. Hunters bring me meat, well-trimmed meat, and instead of just making the burger that they get at the butcher shop or steaks and that type of thing, we now make over 50 products that include salamis, kielbasas, hot dogs, bratwurst, snack sticks, and whole bear hams and things like that. It's a good alternative way to make more of your moose or your deer than just having steaks and chops.
Do you like pastrami, Bob?
I love pastrami.
Well, Jerry makes the most fantastic. He took some of my wild meat and made some pastrami.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And Diane and I put it in rye bread. And
pastrami and cheese.
Oh, fantastic, yeah. So if somebody wants to patronize your business, how do they do that, Jerry?
The best way is to call 943-2584. You can also reach me on email at dunlaterfarm@gmail.com. DUNLATR Farm.
All righty. How much time, Mr. Engineer?
We get about 10 seconds.
Oh, 10 seconds. We're out of time, Jerry. Thank you for coming down. I always
My
enjoy
pleasure.
Your visits. You should be teaching at the University of Maine.
Oh, yeah.
You're a great teacher. I appreciate you being here.
Political correctness and I, they don't get along good.
Okay. All right, our guest. Oh, I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks, and Matt Dunlap will be at the mic next week. And his guest is Kate Gooding, who's an outdoor cook and writer. And then later on after that, I think Greg Burr is going to come in and have a show.
Oh, great. That's
and then
great.
Bob and I will be back in 2 weeks.
Okay, wonderful.
Right here on...
Outdoor fishing.
Maine
Outdoors.
What's the number, Davin?
1-800-966-1039.
Perfect.